The Pulse is indeed what you're listening to. 94.7 The Pulse, community radio coming from the centre of Geelong to you. We hope you're enjoying the Thursday edition of The Front Page. Just an update again. We've got next Thursday will be the final edition of this show, and then following the sad departure of Mitchell Dye, who's leaving the station to go to full-time employment at the Geelong City Council, Monday and Tuesday editions, which was formerly Mitchell Dye's Front Page, will now be Rob Cameron's Front Page. Very excited, looking forward to starting that on Tuesday the 1st of February and beyond. And a gentleman who I hope will be a regular guest through the year on that format is Bronte Price. He's with us this morning to talk about issues within the gay community. Bronte, good morning.
Good morning, Rob, and that's very exciting news for you.
Yeah, it is good. I'm quite excited about it. I'm really grateful for the station to give us the opportunity, but also very sad to lose Mitchell, who is just a really, really good presenter of community radio, and he's done it for a long time. But he's going off to bigger things, and we wish him very, very well, but the door has opened. Bronte, we talk about the circumstances around your community. If we were having this conversation 10 years ago, it would have been a hell of a lot different. We've made some really good advances. I think the majority of people are now doing what they should always do, and that be open and accepting. But sadly, there are still cases that aren't that good. We always try and have a good and bad news story. Let's start with the bad and finish with the good. But some communities still haven't quite embraced, understood, or some people are still feeling very uncomfortable in certain environments for how they how they're being perceived.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm a marriage celebrant, and I see all sorts of couples and all sorts of circumstances. And I was approached recently by two gay women from a little town in another state, and they there's a piece of paperwork that you've got to sign at least a month before you get married. And I said that to them that they could get that witnessed in their town by, you know, the usual JP or another celebrant or a police officer or a GP, a general practitioner. And they were quite concerned about that because they feared that, you know, gossip would happen and that they might get harassed or ridiculed or just get the, you know, the sideways glances in their town. They've been in their town for a long time. They've contributed, you know, financially to that town, employment-wise, and they just felt sufficiently uncomfortable in getting it signed there to drive 3 hours to Melbourne so that I could just be their witness. And then a month after that, they came back to Melbourne and I married them in a very quiet and private ceremony with the photographer being one of the witnesses, for example. And it's just sad that their perception, and you know, to them their perception is reality, was that it was a bit unsafe for them to be able to just get someone local to do that. And there's kind of, that's not the only story of that sort. So there's, you know, there are people from countries without marriage equality who fly to Melbourne to get married. And it's risky for them, for example, to come out in their country. And so even, you know, when I say to some of those people, you know, head to your local embassy, Australian embassy, and I recently had a couple who said that they employ locals, and of course they do, and they couldn't risk being outed by that local officer who, you know, who is employed by the Australian government in their country. And so what's going to happen is they'll fly to Melbourne and I'll meet them at the airport and we'll sign that same piece of paperwork that the two women from the country town signed. They'll possibly spend a day or two in Melbourne and they'll go home, and then sometime a month or so after, they'll fly back to Melbourne and I'll marry them. And that's, you know, that's just how people's circumstances are, some people's circumstances.
Bronte, it's interesting you use the term perception as reality. It is my favourite saying. I think there's a lot in it that people don't consider. They look at their own circumstances. That classic is, well, what are you getting upset for? I was only joking, that sort of logic. But the perception that it leaves on the person is the reality of what we're dealing with. So for me to put the devil's advocate hat on and say, well, those two people, maybe if they had have asked, everything would be all right. So the fact that they have that perception that they're not going to be accepted, that is the reality that they're living with, and it's understandable based on the history in many countries, but let's look at the one we're living in. It, as I said, it wasn't all that long ago that the environment wasn't comfortable for, and your own life story is a perfect example.
And that they haven't just plucked that perception out of thin air. That's been evolving probably ever since they moved to that country town. And it's not just that one country town. There's, you know, parts of metropolitan Melbourne and other Australian cities where the same perceptions are there and are valid. So they would have noticed, you know, the sneers or the sideways glances or just the assumptions that people make when, for example, two women live together and could be housemates platonically, or they could be a couple. But it's no one else's business. But the perception, the feeling that they have is very real.
There'd be cases, I would imagine, where someone could be in a queue at the supermarket, or they could be just standing in a hotel and hearing an off conversation with someone else, and the content of that conversation could be making them particularly uncomfortable. That all of a sudden, you know, you walk into an establishment with your partner, your friend, your life partner, your lover, and someone draws a rather offensive and says it loud enough, that even that sort of thing, I imagine, would happen often. And if you're in a new environment around new people, to hear that would make things very uncomfortable.
Oh, some years ago, my now husband and I booked in just for a weekend in a major hotel in the city, and were asked if we'd like a room with separate beds. And it was just like, wow. We thought that such establishments would have at least some inclusion training, but it was found pretty wanting, and we were just flummoxed by that. It took our breath away, literally.
Now, Bronte, I spoke to one of our previous guests, Michael Lawrence, in the education department about this election coming up and the importance that the issues that are very passionate to him about education look like being hidden away amongst so many other bigger issues that the media and both the major parties in particular are going to push. One of the things that neither of the major parties are going to talk about much during the election, it's going to be up to the media to push it, is the Sexual Discrimination Act, or the Religious Discrimination Act, that's tucked away in behind the parliament. But for your world, it is a major, major issue. At the end of an election, if it's not talked about, whoever wins is going to say, we've got a mandate to do this or that with whatever. How important is it for you to have this act properly scrutinised so that everybody, very much so the politicians who are voting on it, understand the true ramifications of what's tucked in behind?
It's really important, and I think it's probably the subject of a whole other chat with you at a later date. But you're spot on that if this sort of topic, and there's obviously others as well, are not raised, and if candidates are not questioned about their stance on it, then it could easily just happen. As you know, as you said, the party that gets in will say that they've got the mandate, they were voted in, and therefore, you know, that's going to become law. But there's some really shocking potential stories coming out of that piece of legislation. And like I said, I think it'd be really good to put a focus on some of those stories in another session.
Yeah, we definitely will. When the election is called, and we know what we're dealing with, and we're about interviewing candidates, whether they be incumbents or new potential candidates for the electorate, I really do want to get you back to talk about this, because what people don't understand is what could happen, what doors are opened up that we thought would have been well and truly closed by now, because this bill will change, we won't use the word perception, but the perception that the average citizen might have of the new world we live in based on post-marriage equality, some of those doors are potentially going to be closed and other unpleasant ones are potentially going to be opened, it would appear.
Yeah, and it's not just about people from the LGBTIQ plus community. It's people who are people with a disability. It's got ramifications potentially for people who seek services from various religious organisations or aged care, for example. So it's not just people who are from the gay community, and that's the stuff that needs to be brought to the surface as well. But it's not, you know, it's far broader. It's very much going to have an effect on the gay community or the LGBTIQ plus community, but it's also going to have a far broader impact than just on that community.
Well, as I said, we've tucked that away for a later date, but we've got a little bit of time. Let's talk about some positives. Your story that you've opened up to us about you lived a life of a heterosexual male, you had a wife and children, hiding your secrets, tucked away now. Marriage equality debate was good. You are now married to your life partner and happy that the world has changed a lot on a positive side. Are you finding it just really liberating to be able to live as you live now? There might be some little side comments still that I'm sure you near laugh at now, but the ability for you to live a really open gay life in this new world we live in?
Yeah, and people refer to, you know, people living gay people having a gay lifestyle, and if I made notes on our lifestyle and compared it with perhaps yours and your wife's lifestyle, I think there'd be lots and lots of similarities. So I don't understand what the term gay lifestyle is about. But just to give you an idea, this morning we had to get some plumbing repairs done, and we organised for this plumber. We hadn't ever used him. And so, you know, when you have a tradie come into your home, you're hoping it's going to be a safe experience. He was just incredible. He was a plumber with a couple of young kids and a wife, and probably 30 years old, affable, personable, chatted all the time, got the job done, was really neat. Met both of us, didn't blink an eyelid, and, you know, it's that sort of stuff where you just think we are moving in the right direction. So we've moved from, you know, tolerating and accepting to people like this guy just completely embracing the fact that we happen to be two guys in love who are now husbands, and, you know, we needed some repairs done. Let's get them done.
Just that age demographic, we've discussed before on many, many subjects. I'm a firm believer that the change will come from our younger folk. There's lots of cases. Racism is definitely one. Gender equality around women's rights. I think the push of the change in the sporting world is going to knock down a lot of barriers. But still, with those people aren't decision makers. Those people aren't sitting in parliaments and don't make those key decisions. Do you see, as you move around, and a 30-year-old plumber married with two children is a fine example to start, are you feeling as you move around society that younger people get it? It's just the previous generations that are struggling to take grasp?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think as more gay and lesbian people come out and feel much more confident in who they are and in perhaps their relationships, but also their, you know, loving, you know, learning to love themselves as gay and lesbian people. But more so now we're seeing people who are gender diverse, who are non-binary, who are transgender, and as they get the support mechanisms put in place that they so dearly need. And as people, as they become much more visible as well, they've always been there, but they've not been able to have a voice perhaps, then as we see them in the shops, in the street, at the workplace, then it kind of normalises the fact that not everyone is male and female, and not everyone is straight and white, you know. So it's those younger people who are gender diverse and trans and non-binary are leading the way, really, and they're not prepared to take the harassment and the crap that we who trod before them have had to put up with. And I think I find that just refreshing. It's just like they expect people to understand that their pronouns may not be he or she or they.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really important stuff on a nitty-gritty level, I think.
And social media still... occasionally we get exposed to people, and they're normally older people, who just put absolute crap up about, in my day it was pretty simple, you're either a boy or a girl, what's all this crap about? It's just almost fear, it's ignorance without doubt, but it's almost a fear. You just put a wall up because you can't comprehend it and you don't wish to, so you'll challenge it in some other way. But I just wish that they'd say nothing rather than put up that nonsense, because I think younger people are now looking at it and going, really?
Yeah.
We're surely beyond that.
That's exactly right. And what I will never understand is why they're so threatened by that. You know, what does someone else's gender identity or sexuality, why does that threaten you? Why are you so unsure of perhaps your own, I don't know, your own gender or your own sexuality? It's not cake. It's not like, you know, because someone comes out as trans or gender diverse that it's going to affect you in any way.
No, that's right. It's just just an inherent fear, which is very sad. And we'll unpack some of that later when we talk about this discrimination bill that's put up, because I think some of the answers to that question will probably come out when you really look at the wording of this bill and the people who have put it together and why, in fact, they have put it together. I think we'll answer a lot of questions. Bronte, thank you so much for your time this morning. Continued good luck to you in the work that you were doing. It is so good to have understood your story, and I feel so sad that you lived your life for so long hidden. But it's good, and it's always a joy to hear that your voice now, knowing that the world is new for you and exciting for you, and you're clearly very happy, and that's good to see.
Thanks, Rob. Good morning to your listeners too.
Good on you, mate. All the very best.
Bye-bye.
Bronte Price, he will be talking regularly about this subject, and it's one that we continue to embrace, albeit slowly, but more and more people are starting to understand that the world we're living in isn't perhaps what it used to be, but it's not to be scared of. Everyone's got a place to play, and we'll have a lot of fun together. There's a lot of place for everyone.